Hello, you are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. This is part four in our five-part series about the First Opium War. Today we will see the conclusion of the war part of the Opium Wars. When last we had left off, the relatively moderate voices asking for a compromise in this Opium War had been cast out of the picture. And without those moderate voices, we are basically left with two choices. The war will continue, and either China will win, and then trade gets to be nice and tight the way China wanted it to be, or Britain wins, and trade restrictions go away. Because the Chinese emperor had just released his envoy, he actually summoned three new individuals to help him come up with tactics and just generally strategize against the British. And actually, I believe one or maybe even all of them just wanted him to just give up. They wanted him to just negotiate peace with the militarily superior British. But of course, the Chinese emperor couldn't have any of that. So at this point, Chinese troops started to amass and congregate outside of the British-held port of Canton. If you remember Captain Charles Elliot, he was actually there trying to inhibit the opium trade as it was happening. A Chinese official approached Elliot and asked him if he would be willing to negotiate a better deal now that Chinese troops were at his doorstep, and of course he didn't have the authority to do such a thing. So he just started moving American and British merchants out of Canton and started amassing troops within the walls of the port. Eventually, the Chinese did start shelling the factories inside of Canton. Now, Canton was a port city, and the British Navy had set up outside of the port. Knowing that they couldn't really compete with the technology that the British Navy possessed, the Chinese Navy set some of its ships on fire and sent them hurtling towards the British ships in hopes of setting them on fire and maybe crashing into them, breaking them down that way. Unfortunately for the Chinese, the British had access to steam technology, which allowed them to move out of the way quickly enough that those fire ships just crashed into the port of Canton, setting the town on fire. A small naval engagement broke out at this point, which the British quickly won, and by morning, the Chinese were asking for a truce. A few days went by, and for whatever reason, the Chinese decided they wanted to break their truce. They were getting desperate, I suppose. So this time they started launching more fire ships in hopes of destroying the British Navy. This time those fire ships were manned. They weren't just empty ships. They had people on board them trying to direct them into the British Navy. This, of course, did not work either. The British ships were simply too fast and too powerful to take down with such a rudimentary method. Seeing that they didn't really have any other option, the Chinese government ended up paying the English government money just to simply not sack the port of Canton. After this victory, the British Navy started to regroup in Hong Kong, but they did get hit with a typhoon, and one of their ships, the one that actually had Captain Charles Elliot on it, ended up crashing in the sea and sinking. That's an adventure in and of itself, but long story short, Captain Elliot managed to make it back to Hong Kong with a Chinese ship on his tail, simply by swimming there. But after this rather heroic deed, he found out that he had been fired. It was, after all, the 1800s. It took a little while for mail to get halfway around the world. The men that replaced Charles Elliot were far less interested in finding common ground with the Chinese and much more interested in simply expanding the powers of the British Empire. So using the port of Canton as a jumping off point, the British armies and British Navy started going northeast, capturing forts and getting ever closer to the Chinese capital of Beijing. On a side note, as this British army marched forward, what they found at the forts when they captured them was that next to guns and next to beds and things like that, they found lots of opium pipes from the officers' quarters all the way down to the cannons on the walls. The nation's addiction to opium was so great it affected the high and the low, even in the army. On the reverse side of this, the British army sort of saw them as the civilized people in this particular engagement, and while there is an ounce of truth to that, they did forbid looting of any sort from their soldiers, and they also didn't let their soldiers take trophies of any kind from their victories. The British Army was also known to brutally burn down entire villages if one of their soldiers was hurt by a civilian. So British forces marched on deeper and deeper into China until finally they came to Nanking, and everything comes down to Nanking. We will conclude the Opium Wars with the Chinese-English engagement at Nanking next time. Remember, if you like these little history segments I do, you can find them online at kggfradio.com. Just click on the On Demand and find a history segment that looks interesting to you. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.